I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
I am J Clone 9000.
And I am sick.
Oh.
And I'm tired. And I'm losing my voice.
That's a lot of things. It's a lot of the things you're dealing with.
I'm trying not to cough. It's just getting back from fair. I haven't recorded in over 2 weeks. So you guys won't even notice because there should be episodes.
Yeah, if we do this seamless. We're professional podcasters over here. Yeah, I mean, we'll get through it. We're going to get through it. We got to get through this week. It's going to be a long week because soon after this week, we got the Jamboree coming up.
How
Bigfoot Jamboree, October 4th. Tickets are still available. And if you don't want to buy tickets, you can just come for free. Tickets are just for the Friday night hangout with us and dinner and meal and our little presentation we're going to give. And then Saturday for the main show, you'll have access to all the speakers and their lectures and whatnot. So that's October 4th. You can get tickets still at cryptsofthecorn.com.
Shout out to Preston Salone, Rebecca, Jessica Smith, and Cheese Pervert for Patreon members.
Oh, those are our newer, well, Cheese Pervert we knew about.
Yeah.
But we wanted to mention you again in case we missed you mentioning you as our Patreon member. So welcome all of you guys. Good to have you. If anyone else out there, the easy way to support us is joining our Patreon group, and we have a whole ton of extra content. We have a new episode each week on Patreon, and we do hangouts and our D&D campaign that's going on right now.
Jay killed himself in the D&D campaign.
Well, I was murdered. I didn't kill myself. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
You stopped.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was other things
For everybody happening at home, maybe if I remember, I haven't done this in a long time, I'll put a poll in for Spotify. If you stop in front of a bullet train, did you kill yourself or were you murdered?
Well, you need to know what you stopped for. I just didn't.
There was a chunk of gold.
I didn't just stop just to stop.
Or a chunk of gold.
I was busy.
All right, we're going to talk about the South Skunk River Monster Battle of 1884.
South Skunk River?
Yeah, I've never heard of this. Full credit to Adam Benedict, the Pine Bearings Institute, Ghost Monsters in Print, and Oddities in Print. I have all three of his books. Great books. Yeah, have you any of this? I was researching, because he's got a lot of resources and stuff like that. I was researching for something else, and obviously I'm not feeling very well. So I came across an article he did in 2020 about this. I'm like, well, we just got to use it because it's so good.
Oh, all right. It's exciting.
Because it's a historical monster battle.
Okay. We don't get too many of them.
You know what's important about 1884?
I don't know.
Our town was founded in 1884.
Oh, really?
No.
It's got to be around there, though, right?
Yeah. It was 1886, I think.
Yeah, close enough. Was that with its current name or its original name?
Yeah, it was when it was Johnstown or Jonestown.
Whichever one. Jamestown, Johnstown, mm-hmm. Jonestown, Jimtown.
I'm trying not to laugh because I'll start coughing.
We could just call it Jimtown for short.
Yeah. First historically documented in the early 1670s by European explorers Jacques Marquette and Louis Juliet. The area of land, which would eventually become known as the state of Iowa, was thought to be rather hectic establishment. Originally claimed by the French from 1699 until 1762. And remember, there were people living there the whole time.
Oh, what do you mean, Mon Cheri? I don't know what
that
means.
We haven't picked on the French in a long time.
It has been like a few seasons, so let's get them in this episode. Mm.
I can't do a French accent because I will start coughing. So yeah, in from 1699 to 1762, the French had claimed it. Then after that, it eventually made its ways to the hands of the Spaniards, remaining under the control of the Spaniards until the 1800s. The area was once spotted with swift ownership, this time of Napoleon Bonaparte, who took control of not only it, but also the additional 828,000 square miles of land west of the Mississippi.
Okay, so quite a big area.
You imagine if you were just a Native American living out there, every so often, some guy with a different accent came and said, well, we're actually your bosses now.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know how well that would go over.
I mean, there was a reason there was a lot of tension.
Fair. And we kind of, history.
We didn't do anything.
Well, not you and I.
Yeah. The mass of land was collectively known as the Louisiana Territory. And be under ownership of Napoleon for the French until 1803.
Wasn't it James Polk, the president, that signed that deal?
You're talking about Louisiana Purchase.
Yes.
That's coming up next.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was Jefferson.
Oh, it was Jefferson?
Mm-hmm.
What did Polk... wasn't Polk expand the country? I don't remember.
I don't even... Polk, I couldn't even tell you, was a president.
Right. Well, that's the reason I know him. Because he wasn't there... Maybe one term. I don't even know if he made the full term, but he like doubled the size of the country.
Or the Louisiana Purchase. Well, yeah, I'm going to read that.
Yeah, okay. All right, here we go.
In 1803, the relatively young United States of America was only 27 years old at the time, led by President Thomas Jefferson, purchased the entire territory from Napoleon for...
What, some shells?
No, $15 million.
Yeah.
Oh. Which, in today's money...
But...
Oh, I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, what the heck... Would a Native American need? What could they even use?
Oh, he didn't buy it from the Native Americans. He bought it from the French.
Once
again, the Native Americans are just living there.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is all happening over top of them.
Yeah, this is terrible. That is terrible. It's just, I mean, but
the Native
happens.
Americans didn't get any money.
Huh?
The Native Americans didn't get any money. The first purchase, now, I that is not fully correct what I just said. There were purchases from Native American groups on the East Coast. Where then they were relocated by the U.S., or not even the U.S. government at the time, by the colonial government, and put in, that's where, like, a lot of Native American inner conflict started.
Yeah.
Is because of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, and you can argue, some of them did understand, some of them didn't understand what they were signing and what they were doing.
Of course. Well, it's just like in the old movie, I was just harking back to the classic, you know.
I'll mute you if you say Ernest.
Goes to camp. See, you said it. Oh, come on, let me back in. But there's an important scene, though, where it's the last two members of their tribe, and they run the camp, and basically the camp is there to teach the ways of the old tribe. You know, like, basically...
Oh, the bullet.
No, it's basically like a test of strength, like a rite of passage, basically.
No knife will strike me.
Correct. So it's a rite of passage, and they teach that, you know... Basically for young men growing into warriors. But what was happening is a government wanted to buy up the land because they had all the resources on it, and they basically just wanted to level the land and blow it all up and mine it, frack it for the government. And they say that in the movie, the U.S. defense contractors, this is worth millions of dollars. Do you understand? And they're trying to give the guy, he's a Native American, can't even speak English, and he's trying to give him money. Like, if you sign this, you'll be so rich. And he's just like, this means nothing to me. Who can own a tree is what he said. But, like, money means nothing. So that stuff, when they were backing in, it's hard for me to even comprehend, oh, we're going to buy all this land off you. But they didn't. They just took it. And
they didn't buy anything.
No.
Well, no.
They just took it.
That's not exactly true.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't buy most of it.
Right. Terrible.
Because it was just a bunch of the European people just trading money over with each other.
Yeah. in claiming land.
So $15 million, which is roughly today about $300 million. Which, am I reading that right? Yeah, about $300 million. So not still very much.
Not much at all, yeah.
After the first consul of the French Republic began expressing fear of the possibility of a future conflict and a renewed war with the UK, when all was said and done, the gigantic land purchase practically doubled the size of the United States and that would forever be known as the Louisiana Purchase. Over time, the purchase was broken up into very smaller territories, which would eventually become states. Go on to become about 12 states, which these include Louisiana, Arkansas,
yep,
Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, Colorado, Nebraska, Wyoming, Montana, North and South Dakota, Iowa, and
Minnesota.
Vermont.
Vermont.
That's a lie.
I'll just say, what the heck? It looks
I wanted to see if you would get it or not. That it's like
it looks like a thigh-high boot that's unzipped. That's what the Louisiana Purchase looks like.
Sure.
If
after
you know,
nearly
you know.
43 years from the initial purchase of Louisiana, the original Louisiana Purchase, only 8 years after it established as the Iowa Territories, the 58 million square miles, or 58,000 square miles, piece of land known as Iowa was granted statehood in December. Since that time, a rich history filled with notable events has taken place in the Hawkeye State. Some events include the birth of William Franklin Cody, which is?
I have no idea.
Buffalo Bill.
Oh.
In 1846. Not the serial killer.
That's Buffalo Bob. No, it was Buffalo Bill.
It was Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo Bob was from Joe Dirt.
The establishment of the Iowa State Fair in 1850. The arrival of Samuel Longhorn Clemens, a.k.a.?
That is Mark Twain.
Yep. The city of Menestash in 1854. And the robbing of Ocracoke Bank by Jesse James and his gang in 1871.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
The destruction brought on by 17 hailstone storms falling in Dukak in 1882. And the first, sorry, I can't even talk anymore, took place in the Americas, was Devport by Dr. William W. Grant in 1855. Appendix, when you get your appendix removed.
Appendectomy.
Yes, thank you. I just was gone.
That's all right. I had one.
A strange and terrifying event that resulted in the death of countless livestock at the hand of an aquatic monster. In this state is where we get to our story.
Okay. So there's all these other natural disasters and stuff, along with an aquatic monster.
Yeah.
Okay, and the Skunk River, if I remember you said, right?
The South Skunk River.
The South Skunk River.
So in November of 1884, on a farm located from about 5 miles from the city of Okaloosa. Have you ever been to Okaloosa in Iowa?
I have not.
Neither have I.
I don't think I've ever been to Iowa.
Now, I think I have for work, and I don't think I was there. Like, I went, like, I touched Iowa.
Right. You, like, drove over the corner of it to get to...
Something.
You know what Iowa stands for, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to say it. I'm sorry for anyone in Iowa.
No, don't say it.
It's too good of a joke.
Don't say it.
It is. It stands for... We're one of them. When we go there, it just stands for idiots out wandering around. My French teacher taught me that in high school. She's from Iowa, though. So, like, because she was this huge Hawkeyes fan. And then she told us that. And I was like, wait, you're making fun of yourself, but it is funny. But what else is there to do in Iowa besides watch football and eat corn, I guess?
So the farm, which was owned by Mr. James Wright, was a hog farm. It was said to possess roughly 100 swine. Prior to the monster's attack.
Uh-oh.
And the area in which they were kept is said to be roughly 132 feet away from the edge of the river. So you think pretty safe from an aquatic monster, right?
You would think. 130 feet? It depends. Like, let's see here. I don't know. An El Curo type? Sure, safe. But like something with a...
An El Curo type?
Yeah. But something with like maybe a Kraken? Where it's, you know, tentacles could reach out 150 feet away. Not so
all
safe.
The way up in Iowa in the Skunk River.
Oh, yeah. You see how these... It was one of them tree octopuses that just went on a journey from California.
Iowa,
where was
that? Iowa did have, that was California, or that was Washington.
Washington, yeah. It was when them tree octopus just started swinging across the country when we still had trees before we cut them all down.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it to Iowa and got stuck in the river.
The hog designated roaming zone was secured with thick barbed wire. Oh, sorry, I skipped ahead of the line. The hogs were about the size of 250 to 400 pounds.
Okay.
Finishers.
Yeah.
So if anybody didn't know, a lot of farms don't do the whole pig operation. They do everything from feeders, finishers, piglets, like where that they just do a part of the pig's life cycle for the,
huh.
Because it's too hard for a larger scale operation to do it all.
To do all of it. So they kind of just do stages.
Yeah, they do
depending
stages.
On the farm.
They call it loadouts and load ins.
Yeah.
In hog farming now, where they load out from their sizes. So like the farm right down the road from us does, I think 60 to 200 pounds or 220. So they get them in at 60 pounds. They get them to 220 right before they're finished. And then they move on to a finisher.
Wow. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. And they don't all work like that. A lot of operations do it all in-house. But there is a lot of operations in the United States from this time to modern day that still do it this way. They have finishers.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so 400, you know, roughly that far. Designated hog roaming zone was thick barbed wire fence and massive timber posts that were 6 feet around the perimeter. And where only way into the pen was a single entry point located opposite of the riverside. So pretty heavy duty. Anybody don't know about keeping pigs in a pen is they don't like to.
They don't like to stay in the pen?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got to build, pigs and horses are the most heavy duty things you got to build. Because horses will peel a fence down. And pigs will just go under it or go through it. Cows can go through it too, but they're more easily deterred because an angry bull is going to go through it no matter what you put up.
Correct. Yes.
So I mean, there's
especially if there's a guy with a big red cape on the other side of it taunting him.
But yeah, to top it all off, Farmer Wright employed a loyal bulldog who kept watch over the hogs and drove away any potential threats that showed themselves in close proximity to the fence. All in all, the livestock was resided on the Wright farm were kept safe out of harm's way. That was until the unfortunate night of November 14th.
Ooh.
They all exploded.
It's almost my sister's birthday.
Yeah. At some point during the very, very chilly night, I think back to some of our Loch Ness stories. Remember, when would Nessie come out of the lake?
When nobody was watching.
No, when she would go and get sheep, and they would actually tie sheep up for it again.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was always the cold winter nights.
Okay. I forgot about that detail.
So they would stay away from their good sheep herds.
They would offer sacrificial
sheep.
Basically, yes.
So I seen some of those like points with this.
Mm.
That it's close, and it was very, very cold, unusually cold for November.
And the early sightings of Loch Ness Monster were always like on land. Like they were always, so it's something's getting out of the water. Something can. At least over there.
Yeah. So at some point in the chilly night, the farmer Wright's massive hogs had simply gone missing.
Hmm.
Upon checking the area, he discovered that the fence was fully intact.
Okay.
And no secondary exit was present in which the hogs could have escaped.
You don't know, though. Hogs are tricky. They're smart, tricky little animals.
He's a pig farmer, so I'm going to assume he'd be able to find a hole where they all were gone. So, bunch of hogs missing.
250 to 400 pounds. Hogs, there's no hole.
Bunch of hogs missing. In the night, he didn't hear them go missing. You ever touched a pig?
Oh, yeah.
Whee! Yeah, and they just scream, and people think that you're hurting them. No, they just make that noise.
Right, yeah.
So they didn't make any, they didn't wake him up. The dog didn't notice any of that. Pig's just gone. And the fence wasn't broken.
Yeah, it's odd.
So it wasn't a bear or something. Because, I mean, a bear could probably hop over the fence, but dragging a pig back over...
There's going to be signs.
And then dragging 50 pigs back over.
Yeah, there's going to be signs of something.
It had appeared that the hogs had just vanished into thin air. And at no point during the night did the bulldog alarmed at any unwelcome intruders. There were no signs within the pen to signify an altercation of any sort. Everything was found as it should be. So there wasn't like dirt all turned up from like where you could see a pig and a bear fighting or pigs and wolves or any of it. It just looked like UFO had came and sucked up all the pigs.
Probably did.
Well, maybe.
Big Hoover vacuum.
The big Hoover. The only thing wrong was that all the hogs were gone.
Right. That's the only thing missing from my hog farm.
Can you imagine you have hundreds of hogs?
And they're just gone one day?
400 pounds.
My first thought would just be like they got out somehow. Somehow they got out.
Yeah, roughly 100 pigs. Is it? They've had to got out. They had to have gotten out.
Right.
Because they're all gone. Every single one of them's gone. Yeah, the surrounding area was searched extremely heavily and to no avail. Other farmers in the area had not seen or heard any of their pigs either. So there was nothing Wright could do except continue with his duties and hope the hogs would eventually return. So he went all over the town. Other farmers went out and started helping him. You know, yeah. Farming community, that's a lot of them will do that. Nobody had seen, that's 100, 400-pound pigs.
Yeah, they're going to stand out eventually. Someone's going to see them eventually.
Yeah, so nothing. So as the day turned into night, and night back into day, Farmer Wright awoke in hopes of seeing any of his missing hogs had wandered in again once near the pen where they were housed, you know, ready to come for food.
Right, right.
And it's time to get fed in the morning, so hopefully they're here. Unfortunately, this was not the case. And strangely enough, instead of gaining a missing hog, he had actually lost another one.
Mm.
The circumstances surrounding the animal going missing were identical to the first set. Zero disturbances and zero sides of breaking. So it appeared to be a single vanished like the first set. Obviously upset, Farmer Wright set out again in search of the swine and conversed with his fellow countrymen if they had any information. But just as before, the awareness were less than satisfied, and the farmer returned to now he was more down, more hogs. So they went down, and now he's 100% thinking somebody's doing this.
Right.
Because the only way in and out is the gate.
Right. Someone's opening it.
And somebody's taking pigs every day.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many pigs went missing the first time versus the second time. Only one pig went missing the second time. He had roughly 100 hogs on the whole operation. And this is from 1884.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure because he still has hogs at this point, even okay. past this.
Okay.
So I don't know if 20 went missing the first day.
Right.
And then he was really like hardcore looking.
Like, wait a minute. Yeah.
And maybe kept him closer to the house or whatever. Providing that it did not care about the farmer's issue. Oh, sorry. Or was I? Yeah, so proving that it did not care about the farmer's issues, the sun went down once again and the day became night. When the sun came back up the next morning, the farmer awoke yet again to find more hogs missing. The full process was repeated without change, and he was no closer to figuring out what was going on than he was with the first hog that had gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
He had found himself in the middle of one of the greatest mysteries of his entire life. And he was so bound and determined to figure out what was going on, no matter how long it took him to do so. So every night, he's missing pigs.
Okay.
Whether it's one, two, three, whatever. By December 4th, he had missed a total of 25 pigs.
Okay. So yeah, that's kind of a lot. A quarter of your operation.
As just gone.
Yeah.
With all of his attempts to find what had happened to the missing hogs, it failed. The farmer decided to give it one last shot. If he could not solve the mystery, the loss of one more hog during the night, he had made the decision to pack up and move the farm and move away.
All right.
He's done. One more pig goes missing, he's done. So that evening, Farmer Wright bundled up with all the, bundled up to spend the night outdoors near the river's edge in order to watch the hog pen from a different angle.
Why wouldn't he just stay in the hog pen with the pigs? I know people that do that.
We do know people that do that. So he was kind of watching it from the porch, the front of the pen.
Right.
So he was sitting there. So he's trying to duck back by the river and see so he can hide.
Different vantage point.
Well, yeah. So if it's a person doing it, which at this point he still is pretty sure it is, they don't see him.
Right. Or at least he'd see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Coming from that different angle.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's giving it one more shot. So that evening he bundled up. Watch the hog pen from a different angle. He grabs his lantern, his rifle, and the motions for his loyal dog to follow his suit. The two make their way towards the area, practically concealed by thick brush, trees, shrubs, and settle in for their long night's watch. The farmstead was covered in darkness, and the frigid wind was moving through the area. So, once again, I want to point out, it's been unusually cold.
Okay.
Sorry. Farmer Wright, growing more tired as the night passed without incident, began to drift off by his dog on his side. The only sound disturbing the silence was the hogs. They were just kind of rummaging around in their pen like normal. An oddly intense splashing started to come from the Skunk River.
Ooh, okay.
One of these noises are enough to fright off the exhaustion, though. As soon as the farmer is claimed as yet another victim of the inferior Sandman. So before he passed out, he woke up. The remainder of the night passed like normal. Nothing out of the ordinary occurring around the farm, which was noticeable enough as the rose the farmer from his slumber. For all intents and purposes, both the man and the bulldog had a very peaceful sleep. But then the sun began to rise, and the sound of splashing started once again.
Ooh.
The farmer now slowly began to shift from his night sleeping against a tree, cracked open an eye in the direction of the river, and was instantly in shock.
Uh-oh, here we go.
From out of the river onto the bank came an absurdly massive creature with a long neck, a thick body, and huge, huge teeth. The beast, in which Farmer Wright had never seen in the area before, rest assured, slowly moved on four legs out of the river towards the hog pen. Apparently to employ some sort of sneak tactic, the gigantic creature continued forward, quiet and at a snail's pace, stalking the pigs.
Mm.
So this monster, this massive animal, is stalking these pigs.
They came up out of the river.
It held its head and its neck high, not giving any indication of its intent. The hogs, obviously not showing any concern of the approaching danger, continued their business without a care in the world. The creature, whose bulk of the body was now only a few feet away from the bordering fence, slowly rose onto its back legs and stood silently and motionlessly for a long period of time, and its head and neck high, high above the pen. So this thing's massive. It's super tall.
Okay.
And now it's stood up on its hind legs and is even taller. The farmer Wright, who is still concealed in the extremely thick brush, watched silently with his eyes wide and a firm hand wrapped tightly around the mouth of the dog in order to prevent it from giving his location away. Suddenly, and without any indication, the large creature shot its head down into the pen, opening its huge mouth filled with teeth, picked up a 300-pound hog from below. With the speed and ferocity that can only be compared to that of a bear trap, the beast snapped its jaws on the body of the hog. Jeez. The unlucky swine immediately went limp, not making a noise.
Wow.
So like a big alligator snapping turtle.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
The unknown river creature then quickly shot its head up in the high over the pen again, lowering itself back down to all fours and disappearing within its large mouth in an instant. The pig was gone.
Wow, so it ate the pig whole?
Swallowed it whole. Appearing satisfied with its meal, the large creature quickly turned towards the direction of the river and began to run back to the safety of the dark, muddy water.
Hmm.
Within just a few seconds, the beast had reached the water's edge, disappearing in a splash. Just like that, it was gone. The entire sighting lasted only a few minutes. But as soon as it was over, both farmer and his bulldog sprinted out of the bushes towards the house.
What, for protection?
Yeah, I mean, they were just... They were sitting by the river.
Oh, that's right.
This thing just swallowed a 300-pound hog.
They were in the brush, yeah.
Just lifted it 60 feet in the air.
And they just watched it, and they're crouched down in a pea patch watching.
What do you think so far?
Well, at first, when you said, my first, like, okay, it's going to be something simple. It's going to be like a horse or something. He's just seeing, like, a four-legged, long-necked, like, it's a monster. It's showing its teeth, and it's just going to be like a horse.
Kaiju size.
But now, yeah, once you started saying, like, okay, if it stood up on and then ate a pig whole, okay, probably not a horse.
It was
probably not.
Extremely large.
A big horse. I seen it at the fair. The world's largest horse.
Don't make me laugh.
That thing was gigantic.
We'll get into its actual sizes here in a second.
Okay.
But yeah, no, so big. And the way it was hunting was, I mean, he took on a lot of detail.
Mm-hmm.
Of how it slowly approached the pen, but it came out on four legs. They were short.
Stalked him like a spotted handfish.
There you go. Or like a big cat.
Or like that.
With its head held high, and then it stood up on its hind legs to get even higher.
Yeah.
It waited till the pigs even forgot it was there, slammed down and bit so fast that it didn't make a sound. And it very turtle-like in that aspect of the patience and the slowness.
Dang. Waiting in ambush.
Mm-hmm. After taking some time to calm himself down, Farmer Wright headed towards the Okaloosa to alert the authorities of what had emerged from their river.
Big monster.
Yeah. How do you think that goes?
1884. Ooh, even worse, probably. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It could be even 1984. I'm sure it would be terrible.
1984 would have probably been worse than 1884.
Probably. I bet back then, though, people more open-minded, like,
oh. Well, because there was weird things. Yeah. I mean, there still is weird things.
But it's just not, it's.
You have to live out there, though.
To experience them.
So you, everybody has had, if you've lived on a farm, and we have so many listeners, most of you guys have had something weird happen in your life. It may have been small, but you have had something happen to you on a farm or out in the country that you cannot explain.
Yeah. It just happens. It's just the way it is. But, you know, most people, I think majority of people, you know, live in cities or towns and stuff
and apartments and
you just don't get
stacked on top of each other.
Yeah. You don't get the taste of that weird stuff living out in the country, living out in the land.
So once there, a crowd naturally began to form around the farmer as he described in great details the monster he had witnessed. The Skunk River Monster was described by the farmer Wright as being about 80 feet long from the tip of its nose to the tip of its tail. The established neck length was around 18 feet long.
Dang.
The distance between its forelegs and its hind legs was over 40 feet.
That's pretty big.
Wow. So it's 20 feet long in the front, or in the neck, 20 foot long body.
And 20 foot long tail.
Oh, no. Right. So, roughly. Just the distance between the feet is about 20 feet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the front and back legs.
Yeah.
The creature's legs were described as being only 3 feet long and roughly as thick as a grown man's body, so extremely stocky. The diameter of the body, the diameter of the body was about 4 or 5 feet wide, while the creature appeared to be standing around 7 or 8 feet tall. The teeth looked like they were roughly 17 inches long.
That's pretty big.
Mm-hmm. And it's unknown if its skin was actually scaly or it was just incredibly rough, but he said it looked like it had giant scales, but he didn't know which.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, being all wet, too, yeah. I'm sure it's reflecting a lot of weird
marine
light.
Animals in general, mammals can even look like they have scaled skin. While nobody in the crowd knew whether to believe him or laugh at him, they slowly began to trust the words that this obviously shaken farmer, after he urged them to come to his farm and see for themselves. He assured that while they could easily brush off his words without a second thought, they would not be able to easily brush off what they could see with their own eyes. The farmer let everyone who was there in his farm was located and proceeded to the bank alone to figure out how to rid the property of the monster. But he wouldn't be there alone for long. After only about an hour, roughly 40 or 50 men on horseback arrived to the farm with weapons drawn in hand and enough ammo to bring down a small revolution.
Oh.
They were ready. These are all Brandons.
Oh, green!
Not long after they arrived, around 100 more armed individuals arrived on foot, also to lend a helping hand bring the monster down.
So a whole mercenary group came in, basically?
150 people.
Just
armed to the teeth.
1800s.
So the monster who had turned the Wright farm into his own personal buffet had a fight on his hands.
Oh, yeah, but with a bunch of musket shot guns.
This is 1884. There were muskets still, but there was cartridge rounds.
Was there?
Yeah, then? Okay. In 1884.
I don't know when that started. When did the Winchester rifle
probably come 1860s?
Out? Isn't that the gun that changed the West or something? Or won the West? This 1860s?
Oh, probably.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Well, the Revolutionary War was the 1880s too, wasn't it?
But wasn't that ball and or musket and...
Not the Revolutionary War, the Civil War.
Yeah. Wasn't that still that or no?
No, there was cartridge rounds in the Civil War.
Oh, I have no idea. I'm not a history buff, especially not a gun buff.
Well, guns in hands and eyes focused, fiercely, intensely watching the water. The large posse of amateur monster hunters spread out along the bank of the Skunk River. The men on foot were stood equally distance apart as fence posts as to not miss anything that swam by. They were ready. Can you imagine 150 guys
stacked
1884,
up,
pointing at the water, ready for Godzilla to come out?
I kind of hope this thing comes out. I'm hoping.
So, fence posts, not to miss anything swimming by, while the horseback men patrolled back and forth like generals keeping watch over their troops. While still not fully sure of what exactly any of the men were looking for, the men scanned the water for anything that moved or appeared out of place. And after nearly 2 hours, somebody showed up.
Uh-oh.
Spotted roughly a mile from the farm, one of the men spotted what appeared to be an extremely large back of a creature slowly moving through the water. Immediately recognized it He was witnessing something that was not a normal animal. The lone gunner shouted, and every available man near him ran towards the location. While rifles loaded and took aim, several men fired multiple shots into the creature's back as it was moving slowly through the water. Yet after the smoke had cleared, it apparently none of the shots had managed to pierce the creature's hide.
Or hit it. Ooh. Or did it? Is that what you said?
Or hit it.
Or hit it. Okay.
It's always, hey, bullets bounced off it.
Yeah.
Not that he's shaking like a leaf.
That he just missed?
Ah! None of us could miss.
How many people ran over to him and shot?
I don't know exactly because they were spread out so far. Yeah. They were spread out over 3 miles.
Okay.
So there is 150 people on both sides of the river.
Still.
But so I'm going to guess maybe 6.
Okay. Still, that's enough that one of them should have hit it.
I mean, sure.
They should have. I would imagine so. Well, I guess it is a bunch. We don't know who these people are. They're right. Just amateur mercenaries that had a gun over their fireplace.
They hurried towards them, fired multiple shots. Yeah, after it cleared, none of them had apparently pierced the creature's skin.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
What it did, though, was cause the large creature to change direction and move slowly towards the bank of the river.
Like towards him?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
The same bank in which all the men were currently standing.
Yeah, he probably just felt like a bunch of back scratches he just got. He's like, ooh.
Unaware of what was about to occur, the man standing alongside the riverbank watches the massive beast moving slowly, practically at a snail's pace, came closer and closer to where they were standing. Remember what it did to the pigs?
Oh, yes. I do remember.
Even though only a small portion of its back could be seen above the surface, those who were looking upon it apparently hypothesized the simple fact that they were looking at gazing upon a true monster. Realizing that all of a sudden they were in an extremely dangerous situation, the onlookers were unknowingly putting themselves in. The man on a horseback by the name of William T. Smith rode up to the group and ordered them to back away from the water's edge.
Uh-oh. He knows what's about to go down.
He's watching this thing just crawl towards these guys.
With no care in the world.
Like, huh, he's coming.
Hey, guys, look. It's getting closer.
Guys, move away from the water's edge.
I'd give you a quarter if you touch it.
Monster.
Yeah, yeah.
While doing so, though, he had inadvertently put himself in the direct line of fire for what was about to happen next.
Oh, he got shot by his own guys?
No.
Oh.
Without warning, much like what had occurred in the hog pens, the creature's large head neck shot forwards under the water and snapped around the head of the horse ridden by Smith.
Oh, geez.
So shot out like a bullet, the neck and head. Whoosh, just grabbed the face of this horse like a giant turtle. So just grabbed it, pulling it towards the water. Smith, who was at the time holding to the reins of his horse prior to the unfortunate attack, was taken right along with it. So it yanks a horse and a man into the water. Luckily for Smith, though, only a few moments prior to the incident, another man on a horseback by the name of John Atkins had ridden up alongside him. And as the unlucky horse had made its way into being a quick meal for the creature, Atkins had reached out and grabbed onto the leg of Smith. While the horse was lifted, Atkins pulled Smith off of the creature and down onto the muddy bank. So it's this creature's picking the horse up.
Yeah.
Smith was attached to it, and Atkins pulled him loose.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's picking up a full-grown horse and a man.
Like it's nothing.
Mm-hmm. Atkins pulled him off the creature's back. While the large splash and the sound of cracking bones, the men watched as the monster pulled the horse below the surface and completely disappeared from view.
Mm. That's nuts.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. So it's eating pigs and it can eat a full-grown horse.
It didn't swallow the horse. It was chewing the horse.
It's eating a horse.
I mean, there's saltwater crocodiles that can do both.
I guess so, yeah. But still, okay. it can eat a pig in one bite, and it can just gnaw on a horse.
For me, with that neck, pulling a horse up into the air was what the impressive part was.
Yeah, that's it, like what are those beetles? Goliath beetles or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like when they lift stuff up and like suplex it, basically. That's all it was doing. It just likes wrestling.
Hi-yah!
It's a big wrestling fan.
Bones crunch.
Yeah, whoops, too hard.
But just because the actual body of the creature could not be seen, that didn't mean the men or the shore could not follow it. Large ripples and splash on the surface clearly indicated the creature was at, you know, to everyone that was looking at it. Because it's just under the water eating a horse.
Gotcha.
Not knowing what kind of danger the creature ultimately possessed, every available man on shore with their weapons fired at the creature whenever possible. So every time it kind of came up, there were just gunshots at it constantly. Both rifles and revolvers kept a steady onslaught onto the creature at the point that estimated that nearly 2,000 shots had been fired at the creature.
Hmm. Interesting.
But just as before, when the smoke cleared, and the ammo ran low, the men on the shore could clearly see no shot had, you know, ever messed with the river beast.
Nothing penetrated it.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't they just shoot it in the head, in the face?
Because it's the only thing coming out often is its back.
Hmm.
Remember, when it was hunting the pigs and when it grabbed the horse,
yeah,
it's keeping its head hidden.
Right, yeah.
And letting its body been seen. And people talk about plesiosaurs and stuff like that. So plesiosaurs, that's how plesiosaurs hunted. That's why they had such long necks.
Okay, because they couldn't lift their necks out of the water.
Not really.
Right.
Not like we see with like this creature or, you know, Nessie depictions.
Like a giraffe standing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what they would use their extremely long necks for is to keep their bodies way far away from fish that they were hunting.
Gotcha.
Because their heads were roughly about the same size as the fish they were hunting. So the fish wouldn't look at them as a predator.
Oh. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's innovative.
Yeah. At that moment, they knew that the size of their bullets were no use to this creature of such immense size and with such thick skin. And realizing left only one other option.
A trebuchet.
They were going to need a bigger weapon.
Okay, we need a bigger boat.
So what kind of weapon do you think they get?
A trebuchet.
A trebuchet, yeah.
Just imagine that guy on the horse, the general,
what they the leader. Get, yeah, what they get is more ridiculous than a trebuchet.
Oh, really? I'm just imagining, like, okay, the guns aren't working, he wheels in another weapon that's ridiculous, and then a trebuchet, ridiculous, and then he brings in a...
It's more ridiculous than a trebuchet.
An early U.S. Army tank.
You're not too far off. At 3 p.m., word was sent back to Okaloosa with a large weapon was needed at the Wright farm in order to take care of their monster problem. So
I don't know what the weapon, a harpoon gun?
So these 150 of the town's men are out here at the farm. They've been out there all day.
Yeah.
About 3 o'clock, one of the guys come running back to tell the mayor, essentially, that, hey, the monster's real, first off.
Yeah.
He's immune to small caliber fire. He ate Smith's horse. We need a bigger weapon. So you're the head of this town, this community, whatever. Like, oh.
In the
84. So by 4 p.m., a 12-pound cannon.
Gosh.
Which is massive. Anybody know a 12-pound cannon is massive. And an entire keg of railroad spikes had arrived.
Oh, man. Okay. So they're going to fire like a, just a, what's that? Like a blunderbuss style cannon.
Yeah. And you're never going to believe who the guy was that did it. The cannon then, which was accompanied by a man only referred to as Captain Wilbur.
Oh, nice. Captain Wilbur.
Was loaded with powder and packed full of heavy railroad spikes.
Sounds like a good, honest, hardworking man.
They turned a 12-pound cannon into a blunderbuss.
Buzz, yeah. Gosh.
Full of railroad spikes.
Let's see how this turns out.
It just
explodes.
It just is like, well, the monster's real. What can we do? A railroad spike cannon.
I know. There was some farmer. You know,
Captain Wilbur had been thinking about this forever.
Yeah, he was waiting in the wings, and he overheard the conversation. Like, yeah, exactly.
Monster?
Weapon?
Let me get my hat.
Yeah, I have just the thing.
When packed up to the approval of the captain, the cannon was moved into the firing position near the river's edge. Okay, so what do you think happens? I just want to know.
I have imagined they're probably going to bring a pig out there and, like, coax it out and run it in front of the cannon, I guess. I don't know.
If this all happened, this is one of the best American stories ever.
Oh boy, here we go.
So after being brought up to speed of the current situation of the creature, and from having firsthand knowledge of battles leading the 23rd Indiana Battery in the Atlanta campaign during the Civil War, Captain Wilbur knew the enemy in the water was not going to willingly come near the shore after enduring constant attack for the first few hours.
Right.
So he's like, he's not coming back out while we're all standing here. We know that. So in order to best the beast, the captain ordered the men along the river to basically retreat. He's like, just go stand off because it's not going to come back out while we're all standing here. But instead of leaving completely, they were told just go back enough that the creature couldn't see you from the water.
So they're all still there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They didn't want him to leave. He just was like, he's not going to surface. You guys have been shooting at him for 3 hours.
Right. Yeah.
And after they all vacated from the line of sight of the river, a small impromptu army hunkered down and waited. There was like 150 guys, all with guns, all with everything. So finally, at 5:20 p.m., after nearly an hour and a half of waiting, the creature made its presence yet again known. With its large back broke the surface of the water.
Uh-oh.
So he's like, all right, I think they're gone. Captain Wilbur.
Waiting.
Watched as the large beast made its way through the river and approached what appeared to be a decent-sized sandbar, roughly 40 feet away. Making the assumption the creature was going to try and pass over this shoal, the captain ordered the cannon to be aimed at that particular area and notified the gunner to be ready to fire on a moment's notice. So there's a sandbar in the river.
Right.
The creature's going to have to crawl over it, so it's going to expose a lot of its broadside.
Yep.
So he's like, this is it.
You know, this is a good spot. This is the moment.
This is a good spot. The captain ordered, you know, anxious. The men watched the water with sharp focus and prayed that the captain was correct in his assumptions. They would only get one opportunity to do this right.
Well, yeah, because you can't reload all your railroad spikes you just launched out. I mean, you can. You got to collect them.
Do you think it's actually going to fire the railroad spikes?
Yeah.
It's not just a big pipe bomb now?
Yeah, I think it'll fire them out.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Provided, the first time I read this, I'm like, that is just a giant pipe bomb.
Yeah, it very well could be.
Because one of those things turned sideways in there?
Yeah, I just feel like...
None of them are coming out.
I just feel like with the can, I don't know. I just feel like those couldn't particularly
I
get guess stuck.
I don't know how many they packed into there, and I don't know how much powder is on the back of this thing.
Oh, just the fact that they're doing it, I imagine enough.
There is enough.
Yeah.
So, providing himself as the knowledgeable man when it came to battle, Captain Wilbur's assumptions were ultimately correct. The creature had fully committed to exiting the water and climbing up and over the raised sandbar, thus putting himself in the direct line of fire of the cannon. Without any hesitation, Captain Wilbur ordered the gunner to fire.
He said, Duda!
With a blast of smoke and a mighty roar, the cannon shot forward a barrage of railroad spikes directly towards the monster. Almost immediately, the beast let out a loud wail and began to thrash around wildly. Sand and water flew into the air with every hit from the powerful trail of blood had poured into the water, turning the river red.
Wow.
So, yeah, it had ripped a giant hole into the side of this thing.
So they finally broke the skin.
Oh, yeah. I don't think they were hitting it the first time.
You don't think so?
No, because I think it was just barely below the water. And you ever seen Mythbusters? Even with modern caliber, like big calibers, they just kind of disintegrate when they hit the water.
Oh, you think they were shooting into the water?
I think they were shooting a little above, below. I don't think a lot of it was actually exposed ever.
Gotcha.
So after a few minutes, it appeared that all remnants of life had faded from the creature. There was nothing more than an empty shell of terror in which it was. Fully confident the monster was no more, the men on shore brought a team of 24 oxen in order to haul the large beast back from the river onto dry land. With chains wrapped around the head, the neck, and behind the front legs, the powerful herd slowly pulled the gigantic beast out of the water and onto solid ground. Blood still continued to pour out of the wound and filled the deep grooves of the creature's body that had created in both the sand and the dirt by the pulling team. This, too, eventually ceased, as before the hour of 6 p.m., it was recognized through Makasakin County as citizens of Okaloosa had officially killed a monster.
Gosh. One in the books.
So the county actually, at the time, they actually killed something.
Yeah.
So while the body of the beast, now it will be seen in its full glory, sorry. I'm very mucousy.
Stroked.
Accurate measurements could be taken. On the scene, the document, the size and appearance of the creature Dr. Huntsman and Al Schwarm. Together, the men took notes regarding both the outside appearance of the creature and the state of its internal organs that were left. I can't imagine there was accurate documentation of its internal organs after about 36 railroad spikes went through it.
Yeah, launched through it.
While the examination was complete, the men possessed of what was considered the most accurate information of the monster thus far. So here you go. The entire overall length of the creature was noted as being 81 feet from the tip of its nose to the tip of its tail.
Dang, all right.
The distance from the forelegs to the nose was 21 feet.
Dang, long neck.
The distance between the foreleg and the hind legs was 40 feet. The distance from the hind legs to the tip of the tail was 20 feet. The skin was noted as being that of like a gigantic lizard, incredibly thick and dark gray in coloration. The teeth measured at 17 and a half inches and were very similar to those of a giant alligator. The heart was said to weigh 80 pounds and possess four chambers.
Gosh, an 80-pound heart.
Which, for a marine animal, I mean, that's not out of the realm for an animal that big.
Right, but just imagining an 80-pound heart, it's huge.
I've seen an 800-pound heart.
In person?
I've seen a replica of one.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I have a blue whale's heart.
Yeah, that's big. The 80 pounds.
The lungs and all other organs looked remarkably similar to those of reptiles, except they were obviously much, much larger. The creature appeared to be strictly an air breather, but as a testimony of the witness, its notable size of its lungs, it was able to hold its breath under the water for extremely extended periods of time. The quick examination proved the assumption that no bullet had pierced its thick skin. And only it present or would only present the only basically injury from the creature was the cannon fire.
Okay, I do wonder if they're what just shooting at it. You know, if it's depending on what the cartridge is, or if it was just musket. You know, usually it's a like a ball bearing kind of thing. If it was just bouncing off,
I don't think they were hitting it.
Yeah,
because the examiners were like, "There's not even marks." So even like elephant skin that you couldn't pierce fully, yeah. it's gonna do damage.
She's something at least.
Yeah, no, there'll be bullets stuck in it.
Maybe someone swapped out their ammo and they didn't know. It was like a goof. And they didn't realize they were all about to get summoned to this, I don't know, monster roundup thing.
So after the examination by Huntsman and Swarm was complete, the job of skinning the creature commenced. The plan was to send the monster's hide, once complete, send the monster's hide to the Okaloosa taxidermist to stuff the creature. An 81-foot-long creature is going to get stuffed.
That's pretty big. That's going to be a big bill.
And then, after it was complete, the specimen would be sent to the Academy of Natural Sciences located in Philadelphia for display. The skeleton of the creature would be preserved separately and wired to be displayed in Okaloosa. Obviously, the city wanted to hold on to its trophy in commemorations of what, without a doubt, was a famous battle that had taken place in its borders. When all was said and done, two displays were packaged up and sent to their final locations for curious onlookers to see for years to come. Except that never happened.
Oh, okay.
So we don't know. We don't know if...
where the bones and the body went.
Yeah, so let's talk about this before I continue. We're already at 52 minutes, so...
Dang.
Just with the story. I absolutely have no idea if this happened.
If it's real or not.
The place is real. There were farms, right? Like... you could find...
the Louisiana Purchase is real?
Yeah, I'm talking... there were hog farmers, like, on that, like, section of the river. So, if it is fake, if the story is dramatized, if it was 100% made up...
Just a tall tale.
Yellow journalism is always mentioned. Then cowards. The person had to be from the area.
Mm.
So, we kind of take for granted, like, there was no Google Maps.
Right.
And maps in 1884 were not extremely accurate as far as detail for coastlines, riverbank flows, all this stuff. So to get those areas right, you have had to live there.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, I love the measurements. And there's there's dozens of men that are named. And I don't have the abilities or resources to go through and actually see if these people lived in this town in 1884.
Right. Confirm their existence.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot here that leans towards the plausible, and there's a lot here that leans towards yellow journalism.
Yeah.
Fan of, you know.
Just, again, tall tale. Just, like, exaggeration or just telling a entertaining story for the paper.
Now, we talked about this before. in the 1800s, there was the dragon that killed a bull in the Mississippi River, which is south of this, obviously.
Right.
And it was a giant long-necked monster that fought a bull. The bull had injured it, but he'd drag it back into the river.
Okay.
There are other, of the 1800s, there are other reports of incredibly large semi-terrestrial creatures coming in and out of the Mississippi, the Ohio, obviously the South Skunk. So is this that it is a part of the zeitgeist, that this is human nature, that we need our monsters, we need this aquatic behemoth to come and remind us that who we are in the food chain or whatever?
Okay. Keep us in check.
Was there a cryptic species that was preying upon livestock, like we've talked about with the brute dragon episode, like Brianna Sucas, that there were these monsters? And I'm using the term monster very loosely.
Right, right. You're talking just big animal that was deadly.
Yeah. That in the 1800s, they may have been on the edge of extinction, like our horned serpents.
Okay.
Which I'll argue with anybody on. Any of this stuff, I could say I believe or I don't believe. And if you say the I don't care. Like, yeah, there's proof and there's disproof for all of this stuff.
Yeah.
The Ohio horned serpents happened. They were real. They are a fundamental key part up until the 1880s. And then they disappeared. Yeah.
Why, these things got them.
Now, they were a lot bigger.
These things?
Ohio horn serpents.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they were like, what, 200?
They were big, over 100 feet, accurately, over 100 feet long.
Yeah.
I think some of the longer ones were probably two of them together, like basking sharks do.
Oh, okay, yeah, just chain up almost, or
you
appear.
You'd only see one head.
Yeah.
But it's three of them swimming kind of together, so you're like, oh, they're 500 feet long.
Looks like one massive one.
Yeah. And it's really a trail of 8 basking sharks.
Right, yeah.
Which are still, you know, 40-foot long sharks.
They're big.
They're not small animals.
No.
But when there's 4 or 5 of them lined up together, you're 200 feet long.
That's pretty long, yeah.
So I fundamentally don't know. The long neck, the speed, the way this creature is described, it has some classical aquatic creatures stuff. And then it has some that I think is very unique to it.
Right. Because it kind of sounds like, you mentioned it all throughout this episode, like some kind of turtle.
It sounds very similar.
But it also sounds exactly like some kind of giant alligator. Something like that.
Yeah, I can see that. The Roe. Do you remember the Roe?
Yeah.
It's in our kids' book.
Mm-hmm.
It was a gigantic, round-bodied aquatic creature. It had a super long neck. When it was scared, it would stand up on its hind legs and stand all the way tall.
Okay.
So this creature in the row, besides its diet, sound extremely similar.
Yeah, similar behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the row being not a dinosaur, but a turtle mimicking a dinosaur.
Okay.
Like convergent evolution, where their body plans kind of just match the same way. And turtles have taken all kinds of weird shapes.
Well, yeah, especially even long-necked turtles.
There's plenty of turtles.
Mm-hmm.
There were giant herbivorous turtles. There's not a lot of herbivorous turtles alive today, but we have fossils of giant herbivorous turtles.
Aren't saucadas herbivorous?
I guess I'm meaning aquatic turtles.
Oh, okay.
Which,
tortoises.
Yes. Well, tortoises are turtles, and they are herbivorous.
But that's not what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about aquatic turtles. Herbivores.
Gotcha, okay.
But yeah, because they used to exist. This thing's obviously not a herbivore if it did exist. But there's omnivores. Almost all turtles are omnivores, even alligator snappers, common snappers. And common snappers will carry their heads outside of their shells pretty distance. Alligator snappers don't really do that because their heads weigh so much more.
Yeah.
And the muscles to fire them need to be there to do it.
Right. Like
they really can't pull their heads in their shells, and they really can't hold them very far out.
Far out of it either, yeah.
But you have common snappers and soft-shelled turtles that can, you know, soft-shells will be all the way on land with their heads way, way, way out.
Okay. I've never seen that.
And they have. I've seen them when they're, like, especially when they're digging nest.
Yeah.
That they will do that where they're on land so they can see really tall.
Okay.
So they're, quote unquote, standing very tall. So when she's laying her eggs, she can just see what's coming around her.
She's aware.
Because she's not, you know, she's very vulnerable.
Right, yeah.
So maybe this is some kind of giant turtle. The hunting strategy is very, that to me, the heavily descriptive hunting strategy is a big drop in the bucket of this is somewhat real.
Okay. Gotcha.
Because it's described behaviors that, to me, stand out And they may not to every other researcher or every other person. You guys listening at home, just take this as a fun story that may or may not have happened.
Fair enough.
But giant turtles, one that sticks out to me. Whatever the species that like Leelanau is and these other, you know, the Great Lakes monsters.
Yeah.
There were real monsters in there. Whether it was the copterpus or...
Oh, yeah. In Michigan, Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there was giant turtles. I mean, remember the season one or two we did about the giant glowing turtles?
Giant glowing?
The bioluminescent turtles.
Where are they at?
Michigan, Erie, pretty much all the Great Lakes they'd been seen.
I don't quite remember, but...
It was when we did the turtle cult episode.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Gosh, that was forever ago.
That was, I think, season one.
Turtle cult.
Mm-hmm.
A lot has happened since then.
So there are these monsters, and I just think that I kind of am in the boat that this at least somewhat happened.
I think I believe, or somewhat. Would believe in it too, yeah, in some way or form or another.
And I think the creature was probably of a close size to this. So I've heard people talking about stories of shooting bull sharks off the Mississippi Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
A guy that I knew. And then I didn't believe him. And then he found the article about it.
And there it is.
And it was his dad. Shot a bull shark off the bridge in Memphis.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool.
Different time.
Yeah. Try shooting this thing now.
So a crocodile, alligator. I mean, who's to say it wasn't an American crocodile that got way too up there and was heavily exaggerated on the size?
Yeah. Well, I mean, or one like with gigantism, that's just, well, you've seen how it's appetite. So if one just constantly needed to feed.
That's another thing. That's not very reptile.
Attribute?
Yeah.
Okay.
Eating a pig every day for weeks.
Yeah, no, because they might eat a pig once a year. But if it's that big, what if it has some rare genetic condition where.
I mean, that's still, I mean, it's for just gonna a reptile. Keep
growing.
For a reptile, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Now, something I made mention earlier is even our Loch Ness.
Okay.
This specifically happened in a very cold part of 1884's winter.
Okay.
Specifically, it was unusually cold. And reading this and going through this, and I just can't help but keep going back to Loch Ness.
Okay.
The only thing is that we talked about it being, Loch Ness specifically, a gigantic salamander.
Right, yeah.
That when its normal food sources had left for the winter, which were the fish, it would come onto land and eat livestock.
Okay.
So the locals had figured that out. They built their houses really high up. They'd put the sick or dying sheep or a lot of other livestock down by the water. They'd be gone in the morning, and they wouldn't lose any of their good livestock.
That's a good trade-off for them, I guess.
They had grown together, you know. I can't find anything about it. I looked into it for Native American stories in the area of a giant creature, because that, I think, would give more credence to it if they had stories before
the
1700s.
Before we stole the land and...
We didn't do anything.
Well, we as in human beings.
Oh, that's all humans do. So, I don't know. There's just a lot of similarities. So that's another one for a proof drop in the bucket. I'm not saying this is a giant salamander.
Right.
But a behavior that really stands out if it was imagined is very odd to me.
It's too specific?
It's very specific. Not that it's too specific, I guess. Anybody can make up anything.
Well, for example, it'd be like Jeff Meldrum, like when someone shows him a foot cast and he's able to identify certain markers of it.
100%.
That only he would really recognize as being, okay, this is actually like a thing. And if this wasn't here, you'd have to have extensive knowledge to put it in. Yeah.
I think that was one of his presentations he said.
Yeah.
There's like six people on Earth that could make this, him being one of them, and he knows the other five.
Yeah.
So he's like, and I don't think any of the other five are screwing with me.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Which, we love Meldrum. So but that's what he's saying is that it's just, for that kind of specific detail to exist in a Bigfoot cast.
You have to have extensive knowledge.
To manufacture it.
Correct, to fake it.
So I don't know, there's just so many similarities to other cases from the Mississippi and even Loch Ness that we talked about in our big special. I really think there's something to this, and it could be where that thing where it didn't happen here. It happened somewhere else.
Okay.
And the stories, the names got jumbled. Because there's tons of the journalism. We've talked about it in some of our episodes that it's the exact same story, different town, different guy.
Gotcha, okay.
So a newspapers, because we talk about that, where in a lot of Adam's books.
Where, Adam Benedict?
Yeah. Where you see that it's XYZ, the Iowa Gazette is right. posting a story that happened in Kentucky.
Yes.
That actually happened in Georgia.
Yes, it happens all the time, which is weird. It's very weird.
And it's, and I mean, it happens today also, just in different ways.
Yeah.
But especially in the 1800s to the early 1900s, it happened a lot.
Now, I wonder if, like, because there was, but still, it was only, it would only, that story would shoot out to, like, one city, you know, in one other state, and that's it.
And then it'd get picked up somewhere else, though.
Yeah.
And they change, well, it happened there then.
Yeah.
So if, let's say this happened in Iowa, and the Kentucky Star picked it up. Mm. Then when the next newspaper stole the story, they would assume it happened in Kentucky.
Right, yeah.
That's what I guess that's what I'm saying, is that this could be in the middle of the telephone game. And that could be why it's so hard to track down. Because the names may be all right, except it happened X, you know, place, not here.
Not, yes. It happened 500 miles that way.
Yeah. I don't know. But it was too neat of a story not to talk about.
Yeah, I thought it was a good, interesting story. And we still, at the end, we don't really know exactly what it was. Is there any animals that are extinct that could fit the bill?
I mean, we've already... The long neck is a hard one.
Yeah, that's...
There were some long neck marine reptiles that were not plesiosaurs.
Yeah.
And they would actually spindle their necks.
But are these saltwater?
So animals, they were fresh and saltwater. The giants were saltwater. So they did not have nearly as many neck vertebrae as plesiosaurs.
Oh, okay.
But that's why they could hold their necks really high. So they actually did look very similar. They had a big round body, short stocky legs, a long tail, and a really, really long neck.
And what are these things called again?
I'm going to try to say it for you. Tyne strophiorhynchus.
Can I take a peek at it?
It's the second name on my list right okay. there.
Tanistrophius.
Tanistrophius. There you go.
Gosh, that's so weird looking.
That's better than I tried.
T-A-N-Y.
So they did have short, stocky legs, big, like not huge heads, but none of them were this big, as in bulky.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that there can't be any that had gotten bulkier. And they typically fed the opposite way.
Meaning?
They would stand on land and dive in to grab fish.
Got water. Oh, okay, okay.
But doesn't mean the behaviors can't change. Bodies are very similar, though. They're essentially a plesiosaur that can raise their neck and has legs.
Gotcha, okay.
And they are related.
Huh.
They are a distinct group of marine reptiles, but they're not unrelated. They are related to plesiosaurs.
I just want to know, like, if this story is real, legitimate, if it actually did happen, you know, at least somewhat similar the way it happened, I just really wonder what this thing, I wonder if it is just like a one-off creature that, that's, you know, rare, you know, big predator that we just never really made it into the fossil record because...
The fossil record's garbage.
It is. It is. I mean, it's very awesome, too, at the same time.
Obviously, I love fossils. I own many.
Correct. It tells us a lot about what was in our history, but it doesn't say anything about when, where, why.
I mean, the coelacanth is the easiest example for modern day.
Yeah.
As an ancient animal that's still alive.
Yeah.
It exists, and I may get my numbers a little wrong because it's not in front of me. I believe it existed for 115 million years, and then it disappeared from the fossil record for 67 million years.
That's a big gap. Just for them to still be here?
It's swimming off the coast of Africa.
Yeah, for them to still be here. Like, so what's that say about the fossil record timeline, especially when they're just trying to date things? Like, they use it like it's the gospel, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, this was found in this thing, so it must have took place. But then science says, the science says.
Rapid fossilization.
Is real.
It has to be real.
Yeah.
For people that don't understand what that is, and I really don't have the breath left to finish it in this episode, but the process of fossils, or at least the mainstream understood process of fossilization, animal gets closed, its bones normally are what get replaced by minerals over time as the bones decompose, minerals fill in the gaps. So that doesn't quite work for animals that still had food in their stomach because they rot. Essentially, before the decomposition process, and so they say it has to be in a karyotic position where it gets covered in sand really quickly. But we know that's not always true. And then there are caves which aren't just being calcified. So there's like a little teddy bear.
Oh, that's in
like England or
France. The UK. It's somewhere, but it's like a little cave. But there's like a little bridge in front of it. So, but the water runs down over it.
And then the stalagmite measuring thing is all wrong.
Right.
For some
cases,
it does take, let's say, 10,000 years.
Yeah,
an inch.
Sometimes, and then sometimes it appears to be really fast.
I mean, if you go, then stalactites, from bridges,
mm-hmm.
from salt and calcium on right. the roads. There are some bridges that have them like 6, 7, 8 feet long.
And it happened in like a season. I don't know.
Not a season, but over a couple decades.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, still.
No, it's relatively quick. Fast as opposed to what our conventional timeline of that stuff is. Mm-hmm. But what you said about that place in UK, it is like a cave or something. But
it's a cave, but you can do stuff. Like they like yeah. to put stuff in it.
For the simple fact, because basically there's like a little waterfall there. I'm just going to explain it to everyone listening. There's like a little waterfall there, and people, it is a known attraction. Like they stuck a ladder basically under it, and the whole ladder calcified. It looked like a.
So it's. I want to make this clear though. It's not. Depending on how long you leave it, it's not calcium encrusted.
Okay.
There's a difference.
What's it? What is it then?
It's calcified.
So it's turning.
It completely. So the teddy bear, when they cut it in half, there's no fabric. There's not right. a teddy bear inside.
Correct. Yes.
The teddy bear rotted out.
Correct.
And it's a calcium
replacement.
Yeah, replacement. Because
the stuff that so does
like a calcium coating is just covered in rock.
Correct.
So you can make like it's when you like make rock candy in your kitchen.
Yeah. And that's what these people, and that's kind of the thing. They put the ladder there. They hang teddy bears and stuff from it, and it turns them to stone, essentially, is like the best way to put it. And it does it like fast, too. Like, not like overnight.
I think the teddy bear was 40 years or something like that.
No. Oh, it's much faster. Like,
I think it was for it to be completely, it wasn't very long.
I think it's faster than that.
We'll look it up.
We'll do an episode on it. Yeah, we'll do an episode.
So
stay tuned. There's a little foreshadowing for the future.
All right. Well, let us know whether you think this story really happened or not. I'm very interested.
Or what other creature you think it could have been. I don't know. Because I really don't know.
I'm trying not to cough. All right. I got to go cough off air.
All right.
I've been the great and powerful mystery.
I've been Jake Lote 9000.
We'll catch you next week, guys. Bye. Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.